Lamed Zayin Amid Beis, three lines from the top. B'marabba. But just to flesh out that point that we finished with yesterday, because we kind of finished rather quickly. The point of the Gemara yesterday was that sometimes you can do a lakicha or a nesina, because the Gemara is connecting them. That's a little confusing at the end of the Gemara there, because we're talking about v'lakachtem, lakicha, and the Gemara really talking about nesina, but the two are connected. So whenever it comes to an object, and you have a string tied to it, you have whatever, something that's connected to the object, that is considered like you did it. So similarly, when it comes to the nesina, when it comes to the ashes of the Parah Aduma, if you're pouring them in via another object, a vessel, a kli, whatever it's going to be, so one might have argued you got to do it with your hands, or it's not considered doing it, it's not nesina. You see from the Parah Aduma that even though you poured it, that is considered to be an act of doing, even though there is a nothing, another thing that's in the way, or another thing that's allowing you to do it. So now the Gemara has a whole list of things that Rabba and Rabba sometimes disagree about, but there are a whole list of halachas for concerns. So Rabba says you shouldn't stick a person, his lulav, into his hoshana. Meaning, if you have your, you know how nowadays we have these like lulav holders. Have you ever tried like pulling out your rubbish from them, you know, and it rips off the leaves? Yeah. The same thing over here. If you have your arubis or maybe your hadassah mulasa all tied together already, and you want to stick the lulav into it, so if you have holders like we have today, then it doesn't really have an effect on them because the lulav slides in next to them. And we hold, obviously, that the separated lulav branches are not a chatzitza because it's min b'mino, as like Rava says over here, we'll get to it in a minute. But I don't know if you guys do this, but I remove my holder with my hadassim and rabbos, and I put that in the refrigerator every night. I know some of you do the same thing as well. Keeps them really good. So here the Gemara says you're not allowed to do that. The Gemara is not talking about holders like we have. It's talking about that you tied them all together, and when you stick the lulav into the bundle that's already tied, you may rip off some of the leaves of the arabis. And now the arabis leaves are not connected to anything anymore. They're just stuck in the egged. Dilma nasri tarfe, perhaps fall off with some of the leaves. Bahavi chatzitza, it's going to be a chatzitza. So that's the imagery over here, is that some of the leaves are going to get ripped off when you stick your lulav in, because you know with a lot of force and it's thick and whatever. And so now the leaves will get separated from your aravis, let's say, and they're just stuck now, where it's all tied together. And that's going to be a chatzitza, either between the lulav and the aravis, or between your hand and the lulav, whatever the case may be, it's going to be a chatzitza. The Rava Omar min b'mina chaytzeitz, as long as it's the same species as you need to take one of the four, it's not considered a chatzitza at all. Because that's just another species. It's not attached to the branch anymore. So that's what Rava is concerned about. Rava says, no, since it's the same species, it doesn't have to be attached. It's not a chatzitza whatsoever. Seemingly that's way, you see the little aleph over there? That usually indicates how we pass skin. So that is probably where all of these holders and stuff that we use with manazeh, that's where all of that comes from. A person should not ligoyz. You know what ligoyz, what the sharish of ligoyz is? Yeah, gziza. What are you going to say? Gozeis, to shear, right? Shearing. So gziza, ligoyz is to cut. You shouldn't cut the lulav once it's already in your hoshana. The Gemara here uses the word hoshana to mean the bundle, like when it's all tied together. Why? Why shouldn't you cut it off? Well, imagine the case is where you have a very long lulav. And you want to be able to travel with it on whatever the case may be. So it's already in the bundle. You want to just cut it off at the bottom so you have a shorter lulav. Yeah, cut it off at the top, you know what I mean? You cut it off at the bottom. But it's already in the bundle. So what? Because then you're going to be left with some leaves and it's going to be a chatzitza. The imagery is, the picture is, that if you cut off your lulav, you know how the lulav branches all grow out from the stem. So you're going to have a higher stem, it's true, but some of the leaves are not going to be attached anymore because you cut off where they're attached to the rest of the lulav. Can you picture it? So if you do that, you're going to end up with leaves that are not attached to anything. And Rabba, again, holds, that's a chatzitza. Rabba amar min b'mino chaytzeitz. Rabba, again, says the same principle. Min b'mino is not a chatzitza. It's all the same species. It's all lulav branches. It's not a problem. V'amar Rabba, hadashal mitzvah lariach boy. The hadas that you're using to be yotzei the mitzvah, you're not allowed to smell it. So that means when you have your lulav, you're not allowed to smell the hadasim when you're using it for the mitzvah. Esrin shel mitzvah mutar achboy, but don't worry, esrin you are allowed to smell. Some people are makbid to smell their esrin, you know? Wait a minute, what's the difference? Why is it you can't smell the hadasim when you're allowed to smell the esrin? My time, what's the reason? Hadas l'reicha koi, the hadas which exists for its smell. When you designate it, aksaya comes from the word muktza. It's the same word. Muktza means it's been designated. It's separated. It's unique and focused on some particular thing. So when you designate it for the mitzvah, you are removing it. You are being maktza it from its smell. But esrig, the lachilakai, esrig is a fruit. So its function is really to eat. Kiaktsaya, so when you're maxa, when you're designated machilaktsaya, you're designating away from its primary use, which is to eat. What exactly is going on here? So a crude mashal that I said to a few guys in Seder was, when you want to get married, we're always using mashalim of getting married. So when you want to get married, there are certain things that are part of the relationship. When you're maktzeh her, when you're, what do we call it when you get married again? Kiddushin. Kiddushin comes from the word hekdesh. Hekdesh means? What does hekdesh mean? Well, how do you call a prostitute again in Hebrew? Kiddesha. A zonare also. More modern terminology. But kiddesha, that's how the Torah refers to her. Because she's very holy. How in the world could you use the same word for holiness and a prostitute? You have an answer to that? Yeah? Because she's designated for a certain thing. She's separated and designated for some use. So hekdesh doesn't mean holy. Hekdesh means designated. So when a woman is mikudeshes, she's designated to this guy. She's mukdash to him. In what way? All the things that makes their relationship special are designated for him now. She can't go do certain things with anybody else. That's part of their relationship. Can she still bake cakes for some other guy? Okay, no big deal. It's not part of their relationship. That's ancillary to what she represents and how she is designated to him. So anything which is the relationship part is designated to him. Anything which is ancillary is not. So too here. So whatever the thing is, if it's a hadas, it's what it is. It's a smell. Well, then it's now a mitzvah, so it loses the right. You can't just smell it. But the esrog loses its edibility because it's designated for mitzvah. Okay, but the smell is ancillary to that, so that's not part of what's designated. What's designated becomes its primary function. Okay, so you're not allowed to eat an esrog, but you're still going to be allowed to smell it. Did anybody have a question on that?
Yeah.
What's the question?
We read earlier
didn't we just learn Rabbi Chanina took a bite out of his esrog? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole conversation the other day about it's chaser and it's a problem in Hadar. Chaser is only a problem the first day. Chaser is not a problem after that. We talked about marrying people that are chaser. Remember, we had a whole conversation about this just the other day. How can Rabbi Chanina take a bite out of his esrog? Well, he just did. It's huksa l'mitzvasa. What do you say? There's some very simple answers to this. It's a good question, right? It bothered me right away. Right. Missed him, by the way. But the simple answers are maybe he took a bite out of it before Zuckus.
Or maybe it was Yom
Tov Sheni. Well, so what? So what if it's Yom Tov Sheni? It's still huksa l'mitzvasa, right? Unless
maybe
you had other esrogim, okay. If you had other esrogim, then that maybe this was never hooked to the mitzvasa. Okay, anyway. If I'm a rabbi, hadas mechubar mutal ariach boy. If a hadas is connected to the ground, you're allowed to smell it. It's good to know, right? Good to know. What? Would you have thought you're not allowed to smell a hadas when it's connected to the ground?
Yeah.
Why? There's a word missing from this Gemara that the Gemara is assuming from the context from which it's quoting it, but we don't know it without understanding it and figuring it out. When might it be a shaila if you're allowed to smell a hadas that's connected to the ground? Could be, but that's pretty sketchy. Why would you designate something that's still on the ground? That's hard to imagine. You still have to cut it out of the ground. Okay, it's just hard to imagine because how can it be hooked to the mitzvah before it's even available for the mitzvah? Once you cut it, you can talk about it hooked to the mitzvah. Where it's cut, I find it hard to believe. What else? What else? Ismecha v'malchascha. What? Shalom Shabbos. No, I just randomly wanted to sing a song about Shabbos. What?
Is that
okay? He's like pick out and turn around or something like that. Shabbos, are you allowed to smell hadasim that are connected to the ground on Shabbos? This is mamash, a great shaila. You're walking to shul, you pass a rose bush. Are you allowed to smell the rose bush on Shabbos?
Oh, it's so racist.
It's connected to the ground.
It's so racist.
Maybe you'll come to pick it. Zok to Gemara. V'amar Rabbo hadas b'mechubar muter l'ariachmai. A hadas is connected to the ground. One is allowed to smell. V'amar Rabbo. Sorry, esrig b'mechubar. But an esrig which is connected to the tree, still on the tree. Osir l'ariachmai. You're not allowed to smell it. So this is, in a certain sense, the opposite of what we just said, because until now we've been saying something's hooked to the mitzvah, so you can't smell the hadas. You can smell an esrog. Here is when you can't even smell the esrog.
Because the only way, because if you smell it, then if you smell the esrog, then you would have to take it off and eat it.
You might be more tempted, right?
Yeah.
Right. So it's based on the same principle. That's why the Gemara puts them together. Because the hadas is to smell, you can smell it when it's on the bush. Because the esrog is for eating, it's very challenging and no one does it. You don't eat things that are still connected to the tree. You pick them in order to eat them. So if you're going to smell a hadas, you can smell it on the tree. Big deal. You can smell a rose on the tree. You're not going to come to pick it. But if you smell an esrog, it is possible, perhaps by accident, but that would be an avera b'shogeg b'chayav a korban. You may come to pick the esrog, and therefore it's nisr derabanan to smell an esrog on a tree. So this interesting rule, right? Hilchos Shabbos should come out that any fruits are prohibited to be smelled when they're still on a tree. You're not allowed to smell an apple on a tree. But something which is not a fruit, it just smells nice, like a rose or flowers growing from the ground or on trees, whatever, those you should be allowed to smell because you're not going to come to pick them. You're not going to be, why? What's the advantage of picking it?
Smells good.
Smells the same on the tree and off the tree. But a fruit you may come to eat, that's what the Chazal are concerned about. It's always possible, but it's not, not likely. That's what it is. Ezra Mechum Rasa Ariach, my time, Ahadas Ariach, Kai, Sharis Leilas, and Zaya. Since Ahadas is for smelling, if we allow you to smell it on the tree, you will not come to cut it off. Esrog d'la'achila kai esrog, which exists for to be eaten, yisharis le'ilas l'gzir. We allow you to smell it. Asi will come l'gzaya to cut it off of the tree. V'merabba lulav yam esrog is small. Rabbi says that lulav you have to hold in your right hand and esrog in your left. Any lefties here? Not one. So the only people in the right mind. All right, whatever. The lulav you have to hold in your right hand and esrog in your left hand. That's the halacha and shulchan aruch, by the way. My taima, hanitlasa mitzvah, vaychara mitzvah. Lulav has with it three mitzvahs, and esrog only has one. Now, it doesn't mean it's three mitzvahs, right? It's not three mitzvahs. It's just it's three components of the mitzvah. So you give kavod, to that which has the more components of the mitzvah rather than one that has the lesser components of the mitzvah. It's a little confusing. machlekes, mechaber, amor. So it's a little confusing halacha lamaisa. So when you become a lefty, come back to me. If you're a lefty, then you, it's a good question. A lot of lefties try to do both. You can do it both ways. We just do both. Yeah, no, yeah, the same day, you do both. You make a bracha. I think lefties pass like Gramoa that they reverse it. They reverse it and they hold the asterisk in their right hand. But I think it's lefishit zemachaber. I think that don't make a bracha again, but you just shake it one time in the reverse, in the other way. Yeah.
Why do we favor the right over the left? I mean, we do this concept by like doing shayat
shorish. Okay, let's talk about this for a second. I'll give you two approaches, I suppose. Why is it that there's some sort of inyan of giving kavod or precedence to the right over the left? Why would we hold the koshel bracha in our right hand? So the simple pshat is because since most people in the world are righties, we do things with our right hand, it shows that we're interested in doing something with your right hand. You know, when you go into your house the first time, you go with your right foot first, right? You know?
Does that mean that lefties can't do that?
So that's why some say there is an inyan that in general lefties should also do things with their right hand, because it does express that idea. And it's only when it comes to tefillin and stuff that we reverse things, because that has to do with the weaker hand. So tefillin, lefties put on their right hand because it says yad keha, yad ducha. So that's a separate halacha. But in general, lefties always do the same thing as righties. That's one approach. But in any case, if you're a lefty, there is a lot of research you have to do. But the other approach is that it's not necessarily just an inyan of kavod, as much as it's an inyan of, in general, we always give precedence to the right. Give me some areas of halacha where we give precedence to the right. Shema, your right hand. Okay, pick up your right hand to cover your eyes. What? Tzilas Yadayim. We always wash our right. In fact, we pick up the kosos with our right hand and pass it to the left hand to pour onto the right hand. Did you know that? When you fill up the cup for Tzilas Yadayim, you're supposed to hold it in your right hand to fill it up. Pass it to your left hand to pour onto your right hand. Tefillin has its own rules. Shoes. Put the right shoe on first, but tie the left shoe first. What is all this all about?
Superstition.
No, you don't have to. It's an Indian.
Is there something
about
tzedakah also? Give me your right hand?
Yeah, what are you supposed to give with your right hand? What are you going to say? You going to say something?
No, where did this come from?
Where does all this come from?
Can I go back to yesterday's argument?
To what?
Yesterday's argument.
Which is?
Made up?
It could just be made up? So, you know, Hasidim dress like girls. You know that, right?
Why?
Same reason. Because shirt's button right over left. How does your shirt button?
Your button's on
left over right.
Left over right? How come Hasidim dress like girls? Girls could do the other way, right?
Because the girl's supposed to button the man's shirt.
Because my knuckles either goes in the butt of the man's shirt.
No, I'm being serious. That's why it was made like that.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
The buttons are on the opposite side of his back. Then the woman used to button the man's shirt.
Wow.
What? Yes.
I knew someone used to say, by the Hasidim, Sukkot is called Zman Simchosaini. You know why? By the Hasidim, it's Zman Simchosaini. Because only the men eat in the sukkah. Okay, anyway. So, I think there is a much deeper idea to all of this. I think the idea is, what does right represent and what does left represent in Torah?
Right is trying to keep.
Which is which?
Right is like strength, like more dominant, like first, more.
That might be true in general, but right always represents chesed. Represents giving. And left represents restrained giving. Because why I'm saying it, the reason I'm saying it that way is because when a Kadosh Baruch Hu does something that we consider to be judgment or din or gevura, it's not because a Kadosh Baruch Hu is angry or there's no such thing. But sometimes the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu has to relate to us is in a way where the giving is very much concealed. And that's what we call judgment, right? Fair enough? When we talk about punishment, we talk about things that we view as negative, there's no such thing as a Kadosh Baruch Hu doing something negative. It just means to say that sometimes, you know, surgery is necessary and it's painful. But ultimately, it's what enables the person to recover. So anything that is considered to be din or gevura is really giving. But it's giving in a very restrained way. And that's why whenever we tie something, which one do we tie? the left, because it represents a form of giving that's tied up, that's restrained. And whenever we talk about doing something that's giving, tzedakah, so giving is always with the right hand. So in addition to the idea that there's like a precedence because most people are righties or whatever, in general, we always give precedence to the right. And when we talk about the left hand serving the right hand by Netilas Yadayim, that you pass it to the left hand so it can pour onto the right, it's because we want to make that the way that we live, and we want to make that part of our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That anything that's at all negative at all should always be in service of chesed. And not chas v'shalom the opposite. Chesed should never end up with something that's negative. So that's why we always give preference to the right, and that is the real reason why chassidim dress like girls. That's why everything by them goes right over left. Is because by them, they always want to give precedence to chesed. Chesed, 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 chesed. That should be a focus of ours. Our focus should always be chesed. And that should be because we say in Tehillim, the Tehillim that we say a lot, Hashem tzil chal yad yiminecha. That Hashem is our shadow. On what side? On the right side. And whenever, what does it mean Hashem is our shadow? Shadow, you ever notice it? It moves exactly the way you do. Kadosh Baruch Hu works with us. Midah keneged midah. How do we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to relate to us? Midah keneged midah yad yiminecha. Always on the right side. Always on the side of chesed. The Kadosh Baruch Hu responds to us the way that we relate to Him. But we always want to emphasize the chesed, chesed, chesed. And that's why there is an emphasis always on the right side. So those are two different approaches. It's just a pashim shot that we always want to give kavod to the right because that's the hand. You know, most people are righties. It shows that we want to do it. On a deeper level, though, we always give precedence to right, to chesed, unless it's something that represents being bound. Shoes, tefillin. So when something represents bound, then we don't want to tie up the right hand at all. Then we tie up the left, because that always represents a way of giving that's very restrained and very tied back. So the lulav is in the right hand, says the Gemara, because there are three of them. And we give precedence to the more mitzvahs with the right hand. And since the esrog is only one element of the mitzvah, so we hold it with the left. Amalei Reb Yirmiya Lebzveika, Matal Namavarchina Nala Antilas Lulav. What is this mamash, like a little kid question, you know? What's the reason that we make the bracha only on the tilas lulav, on taking of the lulav, as opposed to what? Asher kishan himself at Yivanu, al netilas lulav, esrog, hadas, and baragos. There are four of them afterwards. Why are you picking on the lulav? He answered, hoyel v'gavoya mikulan, because it's the highest of all of that. So, you know, the way I would read that is, it's the most prominent. You know, that's what you see. You go to a shul, you see these people holding up these big spears. Now, that's because there's a halacha that the lulav is supposed to stick up a tefach from everything else that we saw before. The lulav is supposed to be four tefach and sticks up a tefach from everything else. Gemara doesn't explain that. Gemara doesn't say. Al pi machshava, just like an idea to think about. An idea to think about is that there is a medrash that says, see, the question that you always have to ask when you're talking about symbolism of sukkahs is how much is sukkahs symbolic because it's independent? It's one of the shalosh regalim. And how much is it on the coattails of Rosh Hashanah and Kippur? In other words, how much does it represent the completion of a tshuva process versus how much does it represent the harvest and the time of year that sukkahs comes out? Pesach, shuvahs, and sukkahs are its own pattern. Or do we connect sukkahs to Rosh Hashanah and Kippur sukkahs? So this is a medrash that connects it to Rosh Hashanah and Kippur sukkahs by saying that after Yemei Adin, taking the lulav is like a Donald Trump's war march. You know, he wants to have these military parades, you know? This is our military parade, that's what the medrash says. We march around the shul as a military parade, as if we were victorious. This is the medrash. As if we were victorious in our battle, we march around showing that we were victorious in our judgment on Yom Kippur.
So he followed him up on a piece of a tree.
What?
Trump followed him up, not holding him with
no ropes. Does anything else look like a sword more than a lulav branch that hasn't spread out yet? Nothing, right? It looks not much like a sword. I said, what? No, a thing that grows on the ground. Anyway, so that's certainly one idea. The Gemara is not like this. The Gemara says, are you serious? It's just because it's the most prominent? It's just because it's on top, it's the highest? We look, boil the esrog. Take your esrog and hold it on top. You know, like make it the most prominent. Like this is what it's all about. So the Gemara answers a strange answer. Lulav hoyel v'gavoya mikulanu le'esik v'livrich, and make the bracha on the esik then if it's the highest. Amar lei hoyel b'minoi gavoya mikulan, since its species is higher than all of that. Seemingly, because the palm trees are the highest trees, much higher than esrig, hadassim, and arabs. I don't know. Okay, extra credit for anybody that is able to find mefarshim al pi agadata that explain why that is should be of any significance in the bracha.
Yeah, if anything, it shouldn't be like, because we're in our Sinai and look at like the Medrash, all the tall mountains.
So Yehuda wants to argue that smaller is better, and I'm all for that. Being all 5'5", 5'6" of me on a good day, I'm all for that. But what might be the distinction between that and everything else? In other words, that's a chiddush, right? We would not have expected the Torah to be given on Har Sinai because of that. We would have expected the Torah to be given on a tall mountain. Why was it given on Har Sinai? That's a special message by Torah. That's a chiddush, right? They say Moshe's pretty tall, right? That there's a special message there, which is that if you want to be mekabel the Torah, you have to make yourself into Har Sinai. You have to be humble. But that's not what we would have expected. The Torah should have been given on Mount Everest or wherever, some big tall mountain. It's a chiddush the Torah is given on Har Sinai. So that's not a good raya. Yeah. Yeah, I'll brachas adarabon except for benching and maybe brachas adarabon. Yeah. There's some significance to this. I leave it up to you to figure it out. Whoever can come up with a good answer certainly gets rewarded. Mishnah. Ve'echan hayu menanim. Where did they shake the arba minim? Ve'hoidu l'Hashem t'chila v'soif. And halal, we say hoidu l'Hashem beginning and end. Uba'ana Hashem Hashiana to Beis Hillel, and additionally in Ana Hashem Hashiana, which was said twice, according to Beis Hillel. Bishami Aymer, Bishami says Abba Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Also, in Ana Hashem Hatzlichana, we also shake Lulav and Esrig and Hadad and Rabbah. Number Bikiva. Soife Hayisi, such an interesting word. I used to gaze. Viramagamna Rabbi Yeshua. Ramagamna Rabbi Yeshua, Shikola Am Hayamanan is Levayan. Because the whole nation, everybody, the whole shul, was shaking their lulavs. And they only shook at Ana Hashem Hashiana, like Beis Hillel, not like the widespread minig, which was like Beis Shama. Why is Rabbi Akiva gazing at them? Why wasn't he davening? And why does he have to use the word gazing? So, I don't know. I feel this way a lot. You ever go to a place where there's like a Rebbe? You ever see a Rebbe shake lulav? It's intense. We all sit there wondering what in the world they're thinking about. What in the world is going on over there? But we just shake a little, you know? But there's more to it. The more you learn, the more you know, the deeper you can go into it, so the greater significance it takes on. And Rabbi Akiva was gazing at them. You know, these were his Rebbeim. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yeshua, the Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. And he was gazing at them. He wanted to watch them. He wanted to see how they did it. It wasn't just Tom, he was looking to see how they basket. He was Tzoyfe. There's an Inyan to be Tzoyfe at the Gedolim, to watch how they behave, watch how they do things. You'd be so... I told you before, you know, Rabbi Sabalevsky always impresses me. I ask him a question, so he goes to get a sefer from the shelf, and I've never seen anybody else do this. He takes out the sefer, he kisses the sefer before he even opens it. And of course you kiss a sefer when you're done. Everybody does that. When you're finished learning, you kiss a sefer, you put it down. Everybody does that. But you see, you know, certain people, they express their love and it means something to you. And you're like, wow, you know, I got a love swarm like that too. This is Torah. This is our Masoros, our connection to the Eibishter. A Sefer, so special. I saw somebody at the swarm sale. He had like a bottle of water and his phone. And so he was looking at a certain Sefer. So what did he do? He wants to put down his phone and put down a water bottle. So where did he put them? On the swarm that he was looking at in front of him, right? I didn't know what to do, because on the one hand, I'm going to go up to some random guy and tell him, you know, it's not right, you shouldn't do that, so I don't know, he's going to look at me like one of these crazy Haredi. So I wasn't sure if I should say something or not say anything, you know, but this always bothers me. It's a sefer, you can't put something on top of a sefer, it's a sefer. Anyway, so that's what the Mishnah says, is that where did they shake? So we have Hodu Hashem beginning and end, and a machlekes, Ana Hashem Hashiana, or also Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Apparently, the widespread meaning in the time of Rabbi Akiva was that people used to do both on Hashem Hoshia and on Hashem Hatzlicha, but that was not how Rabbi Elazar Rishon Paskin or Rabbi Akiva felt, that that was not the correct thing to do, because we don't Paskin like Beis Shammai, we Paskin like Beis Hillel only on Hashem Hoshia, which of course is what the whole world does bizman hazeh. Shrek the Gemara Akasha, Nianua Mandachar Shmei. Classic Gemara line. Nianua shaking man who Dachar mentioned Shmei, his name. Who has said anything about shaking? In other words, Tana Hecha Koi is another way sometimes the Gemara asks this question. Where in the world is the Tana coming from? Shaking? Who said anything about shaking? Shaiches? What in the world? Why is the Mishnah so talking? Did we just leave off talking about shaking something that all of a sudden, where do you shake? Shake what? What are you talking about? So the Gemara answers Hasam Koi. He's going on what we spoke about over there. What do you mean over there? Because we mentioned previously, kol lulav sheyesh by shloisha tvachim, kedei lenanea boy kasher. Any lulav that has three tvachim, which, why does it have to have three tvachim? That's a shear for no reason. No, it has to have an extra three, it has to really be four. Because you have to be able to shake it. Vika amar, so therefore the Tana said, hey chaminan, and where taka do you shake it? Shake it just when you pick it up? Where do you shake it? So the answer is a certain parts of Hawel. Tananasam, we learn over there. Shtei alechem. Vishnei kiv sayat. Now, the Gemara doesn't introduce the question right now, but the Gemara is headed in is how exactly do you do this shaking? Like, what exactly, how do you do it? So that's really what the Gemara is doing right now, even though it doesn't introduce it. It just says, Tananasam, we learn a mission over there. The shtei alechem, the two loaves of bread, which are for what chag? When do we bring two loaves of bread as the karban? Shavuos. Shavuos, the shtei alechem, the shnei kivzei atzeres, and the two kvasim, the two sheep of atzeres. What's atzeres? What? I knew you were going to say that. Atzeres is shavuos. Anytime you find the word atzeres in Chazal, it means shavuos. Not shmini atzeres. Shmini atzeres will be referred to as shmini atzeres, but atzeres is shavuos. It is an interesting parallel here when you think about it, because atzeres means stop or additional. You don't do melacha, you atzor me melacha. Is there a connection between Shmini Atzeres and Shavuos? Well, the parallel is that first comes Sukkos, Chol HaMoed, and Atzeres. Pesach, Sfiras HaOmer, and Atzeres. So it's very interesting when you start to think about it. Pesach is not independent of Shavuos. Yetzias Mitzrayim was only to get the Torah. And there's a Chol HaMoed in between, which is Sfiras HaOmer. So there is a parallel in terms of the structure. They are both called the same reason, and there is a connection between them. Not the connection necessarily between Shmini Atzeres and Shavuos exactly, but at least in terms of the parallels between the two Chagim. So the Mishnah says, when it comes to the Shtei Alechem, the two sheep of Shavuos, how do you do it? What do you mean, how do you do it? Do what? You have to shake them too. There's hanafa. There's waving that you have to do with these things as well. How do you do it? You put the two loaves of bread on top of the two sheep. You put your hand under all of them. Is probably what it will say when you're shaking it. And if you wave it by being moilichu mevi, sending it out and bringing it back in. Right? That means going out and in. Ma'alehu may read up and down. Shinemar, sharhunafa, sharhuram. It is waved and it is raised up on high. So that's what we do also in terms of shaking it by Lulav and Esrog. That's where we're all headed.
What are we lifting up again? Is loaves?
That's talking about specifically the two loaves and the sheep.
Lifting the sheep. Like,
yeah, sending them in all the directions. So that's what we do. We do both. That it's not about shaking it, it's about actually sending it out and bringing it back in. And the minig is, and not just to go out and go back in, but when you go out, to shake it a little bit and bring it back in as well. That's the minig ha'olam. But from the Gemara, it just sounds like you have to send it out and bring it back in. It doesn't involve actual shaking in that sense. But that is certainly the minig ha'olam based on all kinds of reasons that you shake it in addition to just sending it in all the different directions. Amr b'yaychan ha'mayil ha'mayvi l'mish ha'ar baruch ha'shalai. Rechanan adds an element here that we are sending it out and bringing it back to He, that the four directions are His. Hashem is here, Hashem is here, Hashem is really up, up, down, down, right, left, all around. But the four directions, we are sending it out because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is in all of the directions. We don't really know what that's supposed to mean from this Gemara, but obviously he had something in mind. Rabbi Yochanan is telling us a depth of Kavanah here. And up and down, but he's apparently understanding that directions means north, south, east, and west. And when it talks about up and down, that's Shemayim V'aretz. So we lift it up and down to He who Shemayim and Aretz are His. V'ma'arava masnu, in the Eretz Yisrael they taught, hach, the following. Amar Bichama Bar Ukva, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina. Mailichu maybe, when we send it out and we bring it back in, which seemingly is in all the different directions, even though the Gemara doesn't make that so clear, but Rabbi Yochanan seems to be saying it is in all directions. Kidei la'atzor ruchas rose, it's because we want to stop bad winds. Wind has the capacity to schlep in locusts and all kinds of other things, as well as the capacity to dry things out, as well as the capacity to knock things over. So there are very bad, there can be very bad winds. Ma'ale may read, up and down, Kidei la'atzor tzlalim royim is to prevent bad precipitation. Amar Rabbi Yosi bar Avin mitain Rabbi Yosi bar Zavila zayzay meres. That is to say, shiyare mitzvah ma'akvin esapur anus. Even, or maybe specifically, the leftovers, the ancillary elements of mitzvos prevent disasters.
What do you mean the leftovers from mitzvos?
Well, I would have said it means all you have to do is pick up the lulav. And you're yotze. What is this business of waving it in all the different directions? Nanuim. It's shiari mitzvah. It's ancillary. It's extra. It's something else. It's additional. So even that has the capacity to make huge differences in the world. What does Rashi say? Shiari mitzvah. Mitzvah shi. Shiarayim. A mitzvah that is leftovers. Extra. Shena ikar la'akev kapara. Because it's not the essential thing to prevent kapara, atonement. All you need to do to do. It's interesting, Rashi mentions atonement. Who said anything about atonement? It's just a mitzvah of lulav. Rashi, very interestingly, mentions atonement, which right away goes to the connection between lulav and Yom Kippur. But you don't need it to. In other words, if you don't shake it, it's not a problem for your kapara. Afal piche, nonetheless, chashuva hila akev esapuranus, it is significant in that it does prevent disasters. But, you know, it's just, it's extra. So you don't have to do it, it's extra. Shari tenuf vashiari mitzvahi, because waving is additional, is ancillary to the mitzvahi. It is. Great sir, so question,
what do you mean it was not
true,
it was not to atone for?
That whatever kapara we're getting through our action of netilas lulav, you get it by picking up a lulav, you don't have to shake it.
It's just the fact that you're taking.
That's the mitzvah. But you see from here that when you shake it in all these different directions, which is additional to the mitzvah, it's not necessary. Even that has the capacity to do more, to prevent all kinds of bad things from happening. Shari tenuf, shari mitzvahi, because shaking, waving it is extra to the mitzvah, vayitzeres, and it stops ruchais, winds, utzlalim, and precipitation rayim that are negative. V'amar Rava v'chein malulav. Rava said the same thing applies to the lulav. Rachar Yaakov would send out his lulav and bring it back in, and he's waving. Amar, but he also said something when he did it. Dein geiru ve'ein adesit. No. This is an arrow in the eyes of the Satan. That's what he would say when he would shake his lulav, wave his lulav. An arrow in the eye of the Satan. Ha! Gotcha. You can't get me now. I gotcha. But it's not a thing. Because he may come to do the same thing to you. Rashi, the Satan may come back at you and bother you. Because the Satan is also the Yetzirah. And he may take you to swerve again away from your Creator. And he will be Meisar Nefesh for it. He will really go out of his way because of the bad attitude you had towards him. Gemara other place has this idea that certain people said Gira Bein Satan. We did it this year. An arrow in the eyes of the Satan, and you know it was considered to be a dangerous thing to say. But that's how the Gemara finishes. Okay, take a few minutes, and then we'll maybe we should start talking about Purim a little bit.